Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's getting acquainted with the companies, really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
And this was kind of the big social media story in the news. Twitter said that it is based on the behavior of an account. So if an account looks particular...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome to Monday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Thanks very much for tuning in. Hope you had a great weekend. In the studio, Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis. They write for Chicago Inno and join us on most Mondays to talk about what's fresh. We'll talk to Randy Schaefer a little bit later. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune. And well, one of the stories she pulled was about people who buy clothes from Instagram. No, from a store. Go and pose for an Instagram picture and then return the clothing. Apparently there's the outfit of the day sort of crowd. Catherine, you're looking at me. Do you know?
Yeah, I may have done that before.
For an Instagram pose?
Well, I used to be a fashion blogger, and so, yes, that was a big part of my content.
Okay, take all the time you need. I want to hear the story.
About me and my fashion blogging career?
So you would go to a grocery store. You'd go to the grocery store. You'd go to the store. You'd pick out an outfit. You'd take it home, put it on.
Photograph it.
For Instagram. Post it. And then return it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel about that now?
Not too bad. Got some social media followers out of it and... got my money back.
So there you go. Later in the program, we'll be talking about Catherine Davis with Randy Schaefer, a digital editor of the Chicago Tribune. Okay, Mayor Emanuel made a lot of this last week. I saw the press release of the Innovative Cities Index that was put out, and he should make quite a big deal of it. Illinois, or Chicago rather, ranked what, number 5 in the country and 11 overall? What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so the Innovative Cities Index, this is published annually by To Think Now, and they rank the most innovative cities in the world. So, yep, Chicago came in number 5 in the U.S., after Los Angeles and Boston, and number 11th globally. Tokyo came in at number 1.
And Tokyo is a perennial sort of number 1, right? They do pretty well there.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is it about Chicago that puts us on this list? And we jumped, what, 9? Mm-hmm. Was it 9 spots?
Right, jumped 9 spots globally. So a big leap. Chicago was kind of grouped in this sort of class of cities that had like very dramatic increase in ranking. So that was kind of cool to see. Startup activity, tech activity, obviously a big one. And it's important ranking. A lot of this is kind of sort of vanity metrics, right? But I mean, it's part of the narrative around how Chicago really is changing as a tech hub and a place for startups. Not only does a ranking like this help in terms of keeping tech talent in Chicago, attracting them from other areas, but Amazon, always that story. We can't give up, right?
Where are we on that?
We are. It's a wait and see mode.
But what are we expecting it this summer?
So this summer or fall, I think early
fall.
Isn't
Jeff Bezos going back to school yet? Doesn't he know?
Boy, you really think that it's a kind of like any moment now they're going to say something. They kind of missed a few of the milestones back down Amazon's 24th birthday and blah, blah, blah. So really any day now. But a list like this certainly does bode well for Chicago's chances.
Obviously, if Chicago is number 5 in the country, it's going to be high in the Midwest. But there was another study out, right, that put Chicago is number 1 in the Midwest.
That's right. So a local VC firm, M25, they invest in Midwest startups all across the region, just came out with their second annual ranking of best startup cities in the Midwest. And Chicago, for the second year in a row, came in number 1. Not really surprising. When you look at venture capital, startup activity, tech talent, Chicago is kind of leaps and bounds above everyone else in the area.
Well, I was going to say, who's our competition? But is this the sort of, I guess it is the sort of thing you compete for, right?
Right. So, I mean, you think about in the Big Ten area that we're in, right? There's lots of graduates that are coming here. And they're looking for jobs. And if Chicago is the place that's going to be able to have a lot of these tech jobs, a lot of folks are going to come here. So behind Chicago was Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, St. Louis, Indy, Cleveland, Columbus, Ann Arbor, Detroit, and several other cities kind of rounding out the top 10.
And Madison was tied for number 10. And so are they punching above themselves or below? Because I kind of would expect bigger things from them maybe.
You know what? They're a smaller city population-wise, so I do think they are kind of are punching above their weight. I mean, the university has played a huge role in that, and it's certainly been a kind of a big springboard for the innovation activity happening there.
Forbes came out with its fastest growth, the top 5,000, right? The Forbes 5,000. But then within that, they have their fastest growing companies, and I think there was one out of Madison that was number one.
Yeah, so the Inc. 5000 just came out, and a Madison startup called Swan Leap was the top company. So they're a logistics startup, and they did about $100 million in revenue last year, a 75% or so growth.
Catherine, who else is doing well from Illinois on that list?
Yeah, well, Home Chef, the meal kit delivery startup, they were Chicago's highest ranking business, coming in third overall on the list. They did $255 million in revenue last year.
And they just were purchased, right?
Yeah,
or sold themselves?
They were acquired by Kroger in a deal that could be worth up to $700 million.
So it's funny because, you know, you used to joke about once you got a job as a major league manager, you just keep moving from, team to team. This isn't quite the same analogy, but I feel like a lot of these companies are just always in our news. They're always the one. So I saw this company, ShiftGig, which did well in the list too. I haven't heard from them lately, but they were sort of a unique idea. If they're on this list, they must be doing pretty well.
Yeah, so ShiftGig is a company that's really kind of capitalized on the gig economy, right? People looking for kind of part-time work, whether it's working concessions at a baseball stadium or working in a factory, people looking for sort of part-time work, and they're a platform to connect workers to open shifts. So they did about $42 million in revenue last year, and it came in at $487 million on the Inc. 5000.
I think when we had them on, they were an idea, but clearly now it's up and running, very viable.
Definitely, yeah. They've really doubled down on Chicago, kind of growing their presence here.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Jim and I are going to go to a pop-up makeup stand on the West Side, and Catherine's going to explain just exactly why. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Here we are on 720 WGN. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Of course, they're known for their Monday afternoon visits here, but also the Inno Minute every weekday morning on the opening bell, which airs at 5:22. Right?
5:25. We'll get it
525.
Eventually.
5:25. Before I was at 5:40, so we're pretty close. If you tune in at 5:22, you won't be too late.
That's right.
Let's do that. Okay, Catherine, you wrote about this Glossier,
yep.
Which is an online makeup
retailer,
and they're opening a pop-up store on Aberdeen.
Yes. So they are coming to the West Loop this week on Thursday. And it's going to be a pop-up shop where, consumers can come and try and test Glossier's full product line. So they're a cosmetics company. They make, things from facial cleansers to concealer to
fragrance. Are they known? Did you know who they were before you wrote about them?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, I get their ads all the time.
And they've got a couple permanent retail shops, right?
Yes, they have two permanent retail locations in New York and Los Angeles. But they've, periodically been doing these pop-ups. And before they came to Chicago, they had some in London, Toronto, and San Francisco. And so the idea is to kind of get that online audience offline and get them in person and engage with them and get them to try their products.
And am I wrong, or is it kind of what Google is doing with their new store? Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're seeing is that a lot of e-commerce, traditional online-only folks are realizing the value, right, in the brick and mortar, especially whether it's a permanent place like what Google's doing or kind of the pop-up variety. We're seeing it pretty much most brands in Chicago that we're seeing that do kind of the e-commerce thing have done a pop-up at some point.
All right, Jim, you write about Uptake and their sort of symbiotic or rating relationship with GE, which is just pretty fascinating to me. Uptake, again, is one of these companies that is always sort of in our news that we're talking about.
Yeah, Uptake, one of the most valuable tech startups in Chicago, raised a bunch of money, valued at over $2 billion. So they don't think of them necessarily as a David and Goliath story, but that's kind of exactly what we're looking at here when it comes to them versus GE. And what they've really seen is really hitting GE at a weakness. Their digital business just reported last month, Reuters did, that they're looking to sell their digital business. It's had some technical issues and sales problems. And so what Uptake is doing is kind of really looking to not only poach GE's customers, but also their talent. So they just hired 4 new folks from GE's executive team to join Uptake. And I think that we're getting up to maybe over half a dozen plus former GE folks who are now at Uptake.
So this is the company, the data analytics, right? They look at, Caterpillar was an early partner, when the machinery is going to fail, things like that.
Predictive analytics. So they're working with kind of legacy industries to kind of help businesses know when their machines are going to break before they actually do.
And the CEO who's leading the poaching in a way is a former GE employee himself, right?
Exactly. And Uptake has even created a web landing page directed specifically at GE customers. It says, hey, you know, if you're not happy with GE, come over to Uptake. And it's sort of very publicly saying, we're a different option, a better option for you.
It's almost like the giant is dying and the little guys are just running and grabbing what they can.
They're attacking kind of right at the perfect moment, right? GE is struggling a little bit, especially with its digital division. So Uptake kind of sees a weakness, sort of smells blood here and is going in.
Here come the Lilliputians. Okay, you got that big party on Wednesday, right? The coolest companies?
Yeah, so Coolest Companies is our annual competition where we name the coolest tech companies here in Chicago. So that ranges from, you know, who has the coolest office layout to who has the most pet-friendly office. And we're doing that Wednesday at Galleria Marchetti in Westtown.
Sounds like a party is what it sounds like to me.
Yes, very networking heavy, not a lot of programming. If you want to come and meet some Chicago startups, you want to meet us in person, a great way to do that.
And so, who wouldn't?
Exactly, right, Steve? So we have tickets at ChicagoNO.com. The event is on Wednesday. It's going to be a great networking event, great chance to kind of interact with the startup community in person.
And so what are those events like? You know, what is it? Is it a wild crowd, this startup crowd? Is it a subdued crowd? Or what are these parties like?
I mean, we're not going to get too wild here, Steve. I mean, I think it's mostly folks who, want to do some networking, some job hunting, right? See some folks who kind of want to learn about tech opportunities in Chicago. But we make this event sort of specifically and intentionally very fun. So we kind of announce our coolest company's winner in a very sort of casual way. We give crowns out, hats, and we have drinks and food and have a good time. This will be some music. So it'll be a relaxed atmosphere, a chance to kind of learn a little bit more about Chicago tech.
So it's not a wild party, and yet you do have crowns.
That's right.
So that's kind of a contradiction.
That's right.
Where do people find more information?
ChicagoNO.com. And there they can sign up for The Beat, which is our daily email newsletter, and they can learn more about all of our events and all our editorial coverage there.
Okay, next time bring a crown in, because Catherine just pointed out that she's been with us now for a year. That's hard to imagine it's been that long.
That's right. How cool is that?
Does it seem longer for you or shorter, Catherine?
Kind of shorter. Like Jim said, it's been going by quickly.
Oh, good. Well, that's Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. We'll see you guys again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, thank you, Doma T. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. It is 12:37 on this Monday afternoon. Are you job hunting, right? We all want the job that pays us the most, or at least it seems that's the way. Glassdoor.com did a study of those jobs and talks about that now. On a phone line with me is Sarah Stoddard, the community expert at Glassdoor.com. Sarah, welcome to the Biz Lunch. I sort of had my notes in the wrong order here. How are you?
No problem. Hi, doing well. Thanks so much for having us on.
Well, I don't know if it's a surprise that most of us are looking for the job that pays us the most. Your study said what? It was about 67% of us said that was the most important factor?
Absolutely. So salary is key when people are looking for a new job.
What else?
When you're thinking of leaving a new job, it typically means that you're like stagnating in your career and salary, and so money is one of the number one factors.
Has that changed at all over the past few years? Now that you know, jobs are a little more plentiful, have priorities changed at all?
Mm-hmm. Actually, salary tends to be the number one consideration for job seekers, but we actually found that once people are in their jobs, salary is not the number one leading driver of employee satisfaction. So while money, you know, really talks when considering a job,
right.
Career benefits, trust in senior leadership, and company culture actually are the most, you know, they drive the most employee satisfaction long term.
You know, that's an interesting thing then. So I guess the question is are those two different criteria? I mean, are you moving for a reason, say salary, but you're staying for those other reasons?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see the salary that you're working towards, you get very excited and, you know, think of all the things that you could do with that money. But once people actually start, if you were to ask a colleague or a friend, like, what do you like working about, you know, about your company? People don't really say, oh, I get paid really well. right.
No,
you know, the stereotypical answer is the people. And I think that's a stereotype for a reason. I even thinking about where I work, the people are make it what makes me excited about going to work every day.
And we all know Glassdoor, and we know Glassdoor pays really big too. So if that's not even one of your biggest factors.
No. So this report looked at jobs across the country, so not just at Glassdoor. But yeah, you know, we pay for what employees are worth.
I wasn't being, I was just kind of cracking a joke there, but it is interesting that sort of the thing that what might lead you to another job is different from what would keep you in one. Okay, so you're out with this list of the top 25, and you know, when I teased that we were going to talk to you, the host on the earlier program, Wendy Snyder, said, oh, it's all about tech, tech, tech. And it is in many ways, but it still is the medical profession that's leading the way.
Absolutely. So the top three jobs this year are in healthcare. So physician, they're making median-based salary is $195,000 a year. That's just median-based. That doesn't include stocks or bonuses. And then number two, we have pharmacy manager. They're making $146,000 a year. And then pharmacist. They're at $127,000 a year. Healthcare is a definitely a big trend across these top 25.
You know, it was a surprise to me when I learned, and it's been a while now, because I didn't know earlier, that how well pharmacists are paid. Obviously, a lot of pressure. They've got to get things right. There's a lot of demand there. But that was a surprising one for me.
One of the reasons healthcare is such a trend that we're seeing across the economy, really, one factor is the fact that baby boomers are reaching retirement age and they're requiring a little bit more medical attention,
right?
Another reason could be a lot of these roles are ones that the majority of Americans have the opportunity to interact with, hopefully on an annual basis when you go in for your annual checkup, right? So, say you meet with a physician, they have a recommendation on how to solve a problem, a medical issue that you're having. You go to a pharmacist to then get the medication that was prescribed by the physician. And so they kind of all, you know, tell the same story, right?
So when it comes to medical professions, I think there are five in the top 25, which is down a tick. There were six last year. But it is tech, right? Is it the 13 of the 25 are tech jobs?
Yeah, so 13 of the 25 are in tech. No surprise, right? Technology is making a massive impact on the economy, not only in the tech industry, but you can be working in retail or in healthcare or in finance and have a traditional technology job.
And I learned a new one here. I'd not heard of a career. You know where I'm going here?
Oh, yeah. I had to Google it, too.
Enterprise architect?
Oh, enterprise architect.
No, okay, were you talking about?
I was going to say Scrum Master. Had you ever heard of one of those?
No, what's a Scrum Master?
So when you Google it, right, they say that Scrum Masters are responsible for promoting and organizing Scrum. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't really help me. So essentially they're like project managers for, you know, agile software in a company. So it's a pretty specific job title, but I think because it is so specific, employers are willing to pay top dollar if that's something that they're looking for.
Okay, so what does a good Scrum manager make?
A good Scrum manager makes $98,000 a year, so almost $100,000 a year, median-based salary.
And that almost makes it worthwhile when you go home for a family dinner and you have to say you work as a Scrum manager.
Well, it's a lot of, you know, question and answers, right? Wait, what is that?
What exactly
is
it? Oh,
grandma, this is what it is. Okay.
But
you know.
the top tech job at number four was enterprise architect, which I hadn't really heard either. So it has more to do with enterprise than it does architect.
Absolutely. So basically they're there to... So as technology companies continue to grow and scale, they're continuing to encounter more business problems. And those business problems, they can use technology to help solve them. So an enterprise architect is able to, they have the technical skills to sort of build, you know, products or technology for a company. But they also have the soft skills to communicate with execs at a company. So they can be sort of the middleman between the more technical people at the company and the executives to sort of find out what the problem is, how can we solve it with tech, and then actually do the work. And they're, you know, the ones sort of the in-betweeners between the technical staff and then the you know, higher-ups in the company.
Sarah Stoddard, a community expert at Glassdoor.com. Great to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to talk to you, too.
I learned a lot. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Hey, this is my favorite part of the show.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay, strange question. If you had to value the iconic McDonald's chicken nugget business, how much do you think it would cost? Well, Tyson Foods believes it's worth $2.5 billion, as they're in the works of buying the McDonald's chicken nugget maker Keystone Foods. Tyson has a large portion of the prepared food market, and they're looking to expand that, and this could be their golden goose. Think about it. If you could get McDonald's chicken nuggets in the frozen food section, game changer! Something different. That's what people want to spend their money on, from grocery stores to vacations. And so Chicago-based Equity Lifestyle Properties is taking advantage of that something else by offering teepee and yurt rentals at many of their mobile home and RV park locations. The company is working to attract customers that are looking for an experience. Millennials. But competition is fierce these days, as consumers can jump online and rent a teepee, a yurt, a tiny house, or a train caboose at the click of a button. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, comes by on most Mondays to talk about what's what in social media. Randy, welcome back.
Hey, Steve.
I don't know if you like my hoodie here.
I do. Do you like my raincoat here?
I do, but I just picked up this hoodie at the store yesterday, and I'm going to take a couple of Instagram photos of me wearing it, and then I'm going to return it.
Sounds kind of sketchy.
That's what people are doing now?
Only 10% of them.
10% of people, 35 to 44, say, and this wasn't a once thing, right? Say that they regularly or...
This is a habit thing, a habitual thing, and yes.
I have to tell you, Catherine Davis, who writes for Chicago Inno, she's on the first segment on Mondays, and so I kind of teased this, and she copped to it. She said she used to be a fashion blogger, and that she would do that. You'd go to a store, buy some clothes, wear it, take the picture, post it, and then go return the clothes.
Well, you kind of have to wonder. You look like a man who follows plenty of fashion bloggers.
Oh, you know it's true.
You see this constant stream of designer labels, and you wonder, like, how the heck do these people afford all of these clothes? Well, the simple answer is...
They return them.
Exactly. They're not actually buying them.
And so, you know, I used to hear about that with weddings. People would buy a dress for... women would buy a dress for a wedding, wear it, and then return it, things
like
that.
Oh, yeah. It's not really anything new. This, actually, you might consider it to be more ethical, because you're not really... You know, you're not getting it dirty. You're just... wearing it as a mannequin, taking it off and returning it.
These people are posting the outfit of the day crowd. Is that a thing, the outfit of the day?
It is. Hashtag OOTD.
So you just wear different... So then tomorrow I can't post with this same...
You can't. Got to return it.
The same Marquette hoodie.
Up your ante.
Well, it is mine. I'll say that. Every rip and every tear is my responsibility. I won't be returning it, but I won't be posting either.
Fair enough.
Okay, the Instagram. So we almost talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if we did talk about... There was a company that would take your photos and then they would superimpose you anywhere around the world.
Yeah, some good old school photoshopping.
So if you wanted to pretend like you were an Instagram traveler and you would send this company a picture and they could put you in front of the Taj Mahal or the Eiffel Tower, things like that.
Exactly, like going to Paris, but cheaper and without actually going to Paris or getting the full experience.
You know, not to sound like an old guy, but it's just so upside down to me that people would do it, like, so that the pretending that they were there seems to be more valuable than actually going there.
Right, which I find kind of ridiculous, because I personally would rather go to Paris and enjoy the experience.
Yeah, I don't really care if you see it or not. So then there was this account at Insta Repeat, and they sort of go through all these traveling photos or other Instagram posts and shows that in many ways they're all the same.
Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting. Travel and Leisure is actually the latest publication to focus this account, like you said, Insta Repeat, and it's a female filmmaker who looks at these major attractions on Instagram and finds people post like the same photo. It's the same, like, wavy hair with a hat, like looking out into a sunset, or like at the opening of a mouth of a cave.
So is she making fun of these posters, or she says she's trying to spur creativity by avoiding these things?
Yeah, she's not really making fun of people so much as saying, like, hey, think outside the box, you know, like what you're seeing is kind of composed pretty well and it's not really original.
Insta Repeat, it's called. Randy Schaefer from the Chicago Tribune, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.